Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the
Geek Buddies!
Hey! We are back at it on a Friday today. Sans, one of our members who is still in Tokyo having fun there in Disneyland in the Tinkerbell suite with Brian Leonard, apparently, from some of the pictures I saw. But we are
wearing matching PJs.
I don't know how you even get that to happen. Maybe Michael will post that. Michael Vogel will post that on his social media so you all can enjoy the glory of that. Or maybe I'll post it with his permission on my social media because it's an incredible photo. But anyway, the two of us are going to hold down the fort today with a lot of things that are going on in the world of geekdom. We're going to talk about Craig Gillespie. We'll talk about Julie Gardner. We're going to talk about these new trailers that dropped this week. And we're going to do a recap of WonderCon because Shannon, our one of the hosts here on Geek Buddies, was there this weekend with our brother of the Geek Buddies, Mike Kalinowski. So we're going to jump into all of that here in this brand new episode of the Geek Buddies. But first, let's introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Roker, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies and the Outlaw Nation.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor, where you can see some of our current work every weekend right now on YouTube with the third season of Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City. You can see seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix, and there are the 45-minute seasonal specials. And I think the spring one just came out. Wow. So there's one more to go. But those are all on Netflix right now.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. For those of you, some of you wondering, I'm wearing a Macho Man shirt. You know why? Because it's WrestleMania weekend, and I'm getting ready for it. But you know, we're here to talk about geek stuff. So I'm gonna calm it down. Talk about geek stuff.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. WrestleMania. All right, let's get into the first story here, Shannon, since we have a limited amount of time today, and that is Craig Gillespie. Craig Gillespie is in talks, has not officially signed. He's just in talks right now to direct Supergirl for Warner Brothers and DC Studios. Of course, he directed Cruella, which was, I thought, was a really good film with a two-time Oscar winner, Emma Stone. I, Tonya, which I think really took Margot Robbie to the next level as an actress and led to Allison Janney getting her Oscar for Best Supporting Actress as well. He's been involved in a number of things here, been written a number of scripts and been involved in a number of projects here that are very have a long history with female-led projects, like even recently Hulu's Pam and Tommy, that breakdown of the relationship between Pam Anderson and Tommy there from Tommy Lee Jones there from Motley Crue. So Shannon, your thoughts when you hear about this? Are you excited about Craig Gillespie? Do you like the choice? Him and Millie Alcock coming together. I think it's an Aussie connection. Oi, oi, oi. So what are your thoughts here on this?
I mean, in terms of a sophomore directing announcement for DC, you know, with the first one being James Gunn, who is, you know, one of the co-architects of the cinematic universe that's being presented. Craig Gillespie, man, that's an exciting choice. I mean, again, coming off I, Tonya, coming off Cruella. When I saw that headline, I think it was at WonderCon when it was announced, I was like, man, that's an awesome choice. I mean, again, this guy, at least just with his last two films, has a history of, you know, really, really dynamic female protagonists. So I was curious, I mean, from some of our female audience. If that was, I'm curious what the thought is there, because again, this being a female-led superhero film, plenty of great female directors out there. I mean, Craig Gillespie, to me, I'm like, man, that's a great choice. But I'd be really curious to hear, like, did you want a woman, but you know, behind the camera on this one? And if that was the opinion, I certainly get it. But at the same time, in terms of who they picked for this, Craig Gillespie, that's an awesome choice. And I think that kind of gives us a gives us an idea of where the project is going, despite the fact that it's going to be based off of Tom King's run.
Yeah. And look, I like him as a director, as you said. I mean, I mentioned a couple things, but I liked Dumb Money last year. I really enjoyed his take on the GameStop situation. And I liked how he, you know, profiled America Ferrera in that movie. He's been involved in a number of things in the past year. I liked his Fright Night remake, United States of Terror. He directed 6 episodes of that. Lars and the Real Girl, which I thought was a really interesting film there as well. And then the less said about Mr. Woodcock, the better. But hey, you got to start somewhere. So the fact that he was a part of that, I think, is fantastic and interesting as well. And look, it may be possible that there were other female directors, but either they were busy or they couldn't fit in the time frame that he wanted, that James Gunn wanted this film to be shot. Craig Gillespie, with a great history of bringing out fantastic performances from his female cast, both lead and supporting, I think spoke volumes for him. Plus, I'm going to play you something. My friend Nestor from Nestor Cine had a chance to interview Craig about being a part of a superhero universe. And this was very recent. So I want to play it for you guys and see what you think, Shannon.
That's a geek.
So let me wind this up here. And he gave me permission to play this because he sent this to me. And it's interesting comments from Craig overall. Let's see what you think, Shannon.
As a geek, I see your filmography, and I think that you will be a great fit for superhero movies in particular. Is that something that you're open to exploring in the future, that genre in particular? Because when it comes to female-driven stories, there is a Supergirl kind of dark fantasy movie in the works as well. Are you open to that?
Absolutely. But interestingly, it's like, you know, I'm very much more. There is the darker side, obviously, to some of the stuff that I'm attracted to, and you know, particularly like with the Warner Brothers work that's going on with the Joker and the Penguin, and I like these superhero villains that are based in reality, that have their like human foils, and I'm more attracted to that kind of genre with it. But I would love to be diving into something like that down the line.
Yeah, so that was the last question he asked him. So there it is. Clearly, Shannon, he had maybe been already thinking about it, and some people have speculated, and I know Jeff Snyder yesterday at Hot Mike said, no, that's not true, but, I mean, was he maybe low-key involved in the process of selecting Millie Alcock to be Supergirl, because he was one of probably the main contenders talked to about directing this movie? What do you think when you hear these comments that I just played for you, and that he got this job, and he mentioned, and he even gets asked about Supergirl in this interview?
I mean, my guess is no, that he was not a part of that process. Again, you know, you look at when the Millie Alcock announcement was made, and you know, his involvement is not definite yet, as you already said.
Right. Like, he's in talks.
He's in talks to do this. And, you know, things aren't happening and then we're hearing about them the next day. Typically, these things are going on for a little while. So my guess is that he was not involved with it.
Right.
But especially because it's rumored that she's going to appear in Superman, and James Gunn, not only being the architect of the DC universe, but he's also directing that film. Like, he is going to be the guy that makes the decision. But what I thought was interesting was talking about those darker aspects, those human aspects. Yeah. Again, based off of that Tom King run, you know, this is a Supergirl who goes to a planet with a red sun, so she can know what it's like to be drunk.
Right.
She can go and have this party, because, I mean, the Supergirl runs that we've gotten in the past, it's someone who was supposed to be, you know, looking over Clark, and basically the way she landed versus the way he landed, she's now younger than him.
Right.
And that's like her life has kind of, her responsibility has kind of passed her by.
Yeah.
So I thought the emotional hook that he liked, even though obviously she's a Kryptonian on Earth, she has incredible powers, she can fly, she has super strength. I think the emotional stuff, which I think is going to be the more interesting way into that story, the fact that that's the stuff that he's attracted to, that darker side, which, I mean, Supergirl definitely does have that darker side to her.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be awesome. And when did that interview take place?
Just a few weeks ago. So
he was full on having these conversations.
Yeah, probably.
With Warner Brothers.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Most likely, yes, having those conversations, because the tweet is from, let me see. All right, the tweet is from, this was from October 11th in 2023. So this was what, 6 months ago, six, 7 months ago that he was asked about this. So a bit of a prescient question from Nestor to ask him this and then to get his response from Craig. And clear, and look, as you said, these things don't happen overnight. It may have been that he was one of these people just quietly having conversations with James Gunn for quite some time before it came time to have talks about locking this down. Because you can talk about stuff for months ahead of time, and it's a matter of, well, when the time finally comes to make the decision, okay, now let's get into negotiations. It doesn't mean you're going to get the job. Just because you've been talking with the people for a few months, it all depends on your agents, all depends on what they're offering you, depends on if it works for you, the scheduling, all of that stuff. So he very well might have been in the process for a bit of time before. But you're right, the darker aspects of it all, it makes me think that this is going to be an even more interesting Supergirl than we would have thought. And with Millie Alcock, who we've seen in House of Dragon, play these darker roles, darker edges, and darker layers in the roles, I think it's going to be a great combination to see. But as you said, now, how many people wanted a female director? And so it's, but I haven't seen the backlash on this one. And I think it's because he's gotten some great performances from female actresses, and people are just kind of like, okay, I wanted a female director, but I kind of like this guy, so I'm not going to get too upset about it. It seems like that to me, Shane. I don't know. Am I off?
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. It's like, I hadn't read anything about it. Yeah. But I was curious, you know, amongst the fan base, if there had been any chat, had been any chatter about that. But again, you mentioned already, Pam and Tommy Lee, I, Tanya, Cruella, like he has a history of bringing out a fantastic performance with a female protagonist.
Yeah. So we'll see. And if any of you all who are watching us, any of our female fans who maybe have an issue with this, let us know what you thought about it in the comment section as you listen to this section of the show here. All right, let's move on to the second part here. Speaking of female actresses in superhero films here, Shannon, let's move on to Julia Garner. Julia Garner, the sources tell Deadline that Emmy winner Julia Garner here is set to play Silver Surfer in the new Fantastic Four movie. She'll be joining, of course, Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn, and Eben Moss-Bachrock in this under Matt Shakman's direction. The production is supposed to begin this summer. A film is set to be out in July of 2025. She's landed multiple Emmy nominations. She's won 3 Emmys, for the love of God. And she's got a number of films coming out here soon after Royal Hotel, which came out already a few months ago. She's got Wolfman coming out, and then she has the Paramount thriller Apartment 7A. Shannon, this got the predictable amount of backlash from people. So first they were like, don't you dare gender swap and make Norrin Radd a woman. Great. We're not going to do that. We're going to find another Silver Surfer and we're going to make her a woman, but she is connected to Norrin Radd. She's Norrin Radd's lover. Galactus is involved in this. The Fantastic Four is involved in this story, and she does become the Silver Surfer. So, Shannon, what are your thoughts on the casting, and what are your thoughts on the controversy, the ensuing controversy, and do you think she's going to work, and the story of Shalabal is going to work here in a Fantastic Four movie?
I mean, in terms of making the Silver Surfer Shalabal, no issue with that at all. I'm like, yeah, more than likely, you know, the MCU's plans for the Fantastic Four, they're not one movie. They're going to go on for a while. And to say that she's going to be the last Silver Surfer, again, I think is inaccurate. I mean, I think Kevin Feige and the MCU creative folks know that fans do really like Norrin Radd. Like they do want to see that character at some point. And I think we will see that character at some point. So the fact that they're starting this off with Shalabal, not an issue at all.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's a smart choice. In terms of Julia Garner, you know, every once in a while there are these performers that get sort of this universal acclaim, but for whatever reason, their screen presence, their talent just doesn't resonate with someone. And I'm just not a big Julia Garner fan. Based off of Ozark, I found that character pretty grating, which again, you don't put everything on the performer. The performer is a component of that performance. Like, you know, you have writers, you have directors. Watching her in Inventing Anna, that was another one that I'm like, man, I just am not into this. I am just not into this performer. And then throw on The Assistant as well. Like that was a film that I was really excited to see.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, look, I'm just not a Julia Garner fan. That being said, I'm certainly excited to see this movie. And that's not to say that I could watch her performance in Fantastic Four and be like, well, I clearly, for whatever reason, those earlier roles didn't click with me, but this one is really clicking with me for whatever reason. And again, that's not to say that I think she is not talented or whatever. I'm just like, you know, it's like a sandwich. Like sometimes like, no, I don't want this topping on my sandwich. I was a little more interested when it was going to be Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, sure.
Because she is a performer that I do really, really like. All of her performances, I thought, have been fantastic. Yeah. But Julia Garner is who they're going with. So it's just sort of like, all right, we'll wait and see. 2026.
Right, exactly. It's going to be a bit before that thing comes out. But I like the choice as well. She's a strong actress. I mean, and look at all the people they've cast in the film. There's a lot of strong Emmy-winning, award-nominated actors who are coming in to play these roles. This is the Marvel fucking blueprint, right? They want to bring in people who've got a lot of experience, who are recognized by their peers for their work with awards, so they can lock down these iconic roles and give them some foundation, a strong foundation to bounce off of. And I saw people getting upset. Like, I posted about this, and a lot of people got upset. A lot of the right-wing YouTubers got so upset about it, and the anti-woke people got upset about it, but there's no satisfying them, right? And they're like, well, Marvel did this, and Marvel's done this, and Marvel's done that. And it's like, I'm like, let's just wait and see where they're going with this, and let's see how it works. But the curious part of this, though, Shannon, because a lot of people wanted Norrin Radd, and all of a sudden there's Norrin Radd fans out of nowhere who have apparently counted the millions. Never mind, there's never been a Silver Surfer standalone movie, so whatever. But the Lakeith Stanfield tweeted something and then took it down. He said, quote, thought it was going to be me, and then went back and forth with some people who were making comments about it, and then took the whole post down. So I need to hear what your speculation might be on this. Do you think that he is going to be another Silver Surfer in the Marvel Universe? Do you think he's Norrin Radd? Do you think maybe that he was being playful, or do you think that this is a legitimate complaint? I mean, because I don't think this is the way Feige would have wanted people to know Lakeith Stanfield is going to be a Silver Surfer in the Marvel Universe. So what's your speculation on why he would tweet that and then take it down?
Wow. I mean, that's really, really surprising.
I hadn't heard of this. Okay.
Was the tweet connected to her announcement?
Yes.
It was
connected to her announcement.
I'm going to go with he was being playful. Okay. That's what I'm going to go with, because looking at the career of Lakeith Stanfield, and you have to give his rep some credit there as well.
Sure.
He seems to be a pretty savvy guy, and I don't think he is the type at this point, and I could be wrong. Obviously, I don't know him personally. I don't think he's the type that would air out dirty laundry online.
Yeah.
Now there have been performers who have done this in the past, and it's been a little surprising. Like, oh, I didn't think you were going to say the quiet part out loud. but in terms of him playing Norrin Radd, I'm like, man, that would be awesome. I mean, Lakeith Stanfield is a performer, is an actor that has been the source of rumors in the past. Like,
yes,
people have talked about him possibly playing Dr. Doom, and like whether or not these rumors had any credence, that's another question.
Right.
But he is an actor that audiences do resonate with. So it would not be a shock if Feige and company wanted him involved in some capacity. Him playing the Silver Surfer, to me, that is fantastic casting. I think that sounds like a home run. But I'm also thinking about like when Josh Gad was posting, those photos of the Penguin. Like, whether or not those conversations actually happened, or if he was just trying to drum up, he was having fun, or he was just trying to drum up a little interest. I mean, Simu Liu, he was not a star when he tweeted that Shang-Chi tweet way back when. But no, my guess is that Lakeith Stanfield was probably having a little bit of fun, but not having read the back and forth that followed it, I can't say for sure.
Yeah, it's quizzical, because I don't understand why you would do this, why you would make this decision. Like, what is the logic here? Where are you going with this? And what will ultimately be the end goal of this, of you saying this and going back and forth with the fans there? Because it's a terrible way to introduce yourself as possibly Norrin Radd. in the Marvel universe. I know Kevin, I have a feeling, I'm gonna say I don't know because I don't know Mr. Feige personally, but I can't imagine Kevin Feige would be like, oh yeah, totally just drop this and fuck with the fans to come on top of us announcing Julia Garner here as Silver Surfer. So it's a quizzical decision on and then to take it down, it makes it even more quizzical for me personally. It reminds me a little bit of Rosario when she was posting stuff about Ahsoka initially at the beginning when she was first cast, and then took stuff down because people were kind of looking at everything and analyzing it. So I don't know. It seems odd, and I feel like Lakeith should come out and say something about it and make a statement because people were kind of like going crazy about it. So who knew about it, I should say, because Shannon, clearly you didn't know about it, but who saw it?
My guess is that if he is involved with the MCU in any capacity, that he is not going to say another thing. that would be my guess. And again, just because Feige doesn't want someone to post something or talk about something, that doesn't mean that they're not going to do it.
Yeah,
look at Alfred Molina with No Way Home. I mean, that had not been confirmed. And he's like, well, I think we can say this. Like, I'm probably not supposed to, but this is like the worst kept secret. And Kevin Feige, who's normally pretty tight-lipped about that type of thing, is just kind of like, well, now we know we can't trust Alfred Molina with the information.
Put him in the Tom Holland bucket. Put him in the Tom Holland bucket. We can't trust him. Or Ruffalo as well. Anyway, all right, let's take a... Well, there we go. We'll see what happens. As you said, it's going to be a while before we see the movie, and we'll see her role in it. And
it's 2025. Ball. I think I said 2026. Yeah. It's next year. It's 2025.
Yeah, next year. They're going to start shooting this year, and supposedly we'll have it ready in a year. Post-production in a... I don't know. We'll see. Maybe. Let's take a quick break, Shannon, and on the other side, we'll jump into your trailers right after this. Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertip. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, BUDDIES. Simply visit marquee.tv and use the promo code BUDDIES to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code BUDDIES.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today and keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are we doing a Superman tree?
Well, we were talking about Supergirl at first, and then we moved to Fantastic Four, or we moved to Silver Surfer. I was thinking about humming the Beastie Boys Intergalactic.
Nice. That's a tough one.
I wasn't sure I was going to get there.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's get into the trailers, brother man. Where did you like to go?
Well, we're starting with trailers. We get the second trailer for a film that's coming out in just a couple of weeks. This is Abigail. This is from the directing team known as Radio Silence, but it's Tyler Gillette and Matt Bettinelli Open. These are also the guys that directed Scream 5, Scream 6, and one of my favorite movies of the year that it came out, Ready or Not. So, you know, the first trailer really kind of laid out what this movie is going to be. Yeah. We have a group of kidnappers who kidnap the daughter of a powerful underworld figure and keep her in a house for 24 hours. And they find out within that 24 hours that that daughter is a little vampire ballerina. And suddenly they are not the hunters. They are the hunted. Mm-hmm. The second trailer is really just kind of really doubling down on the horror aspect. That first one of the things with Ready or Not is it is really, really funny. And the first trailer for Abigail definitely leaned into that comedy as well. Yeah. Whereas the second one, you forget that, they're horror directors. So there are going to be those jump scares. There's going to be that dread. There's going to be that gore. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the main topic.
Yeah.
But my guess is that this film is hopefully going to be a blast. But yeah, this one definitely leans into the more traditional horror aspects of the films. But Johnny, what did you think of our second look at Abigail?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if it's going to be good. I don't know what's going to happen. But I like these kind of smaller horror films that have a tongue firmly planted in its cheek, but does not sacrifice the gore and the horror for that humor. So I like that balance here. I enjoyed the Ready or Not, and as we talked about on Hot Mic yesterday, there is a sequel in the works, possibly with Samara Weaving coming back to be part of it, but not Radio Silence. And they did the last two Scream installments, 6 and 7, which I enjoyed for what they were. Not great, but I certainly enjoyed them. So I like the Radio Silence point of view. So I'm excited to see this film and see what they produce out of this one. I like the cast for the most part. Gotta say, I whatever people's feelings are about Melissa Barrera and her political stances, I'm not getting that involved with that. It just don't find her that compelling of an actress. And I see these more scenes I see from here, the less interested I am to see her be the lead, and the more I want to see more with the little girl, or maybe Catherine Newton, or even Dan Stevens, who I thought was the best part of a Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which I saw over the weekend and kind of stupidly enjoy. So I like the cast, a bunch of character actors, along with Dan Stevens. And so I want to see how this all plays out. But as you said, the imagery and the gore and the horror in this trailer makes me be like, oh man, this is going to be a blast. And I'm probably going to, you know, make this movement a number of times while I'm watching the movie, but still hopefully enjoy this thing. And I think I have a screening for it next week, so I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I think so.
Ready or Not was, I mean, again, it was such a unique premise.
Yeah.
And a premise that we don't really find out, like, we don't get the whole picture until about halfway through the movie. Hmm. And the feeling that I'm getting is that that's going to be the same with this one as well. As you said, I really like the cast, like Catherine Newton. I was not a huge fan of her in Quantumania. But with this one, based off of the things that I've seen, I'm like, this is your sweet spot. This is let her be funny, because she is funny. Kevin Durant coming in, Dan Stevens, as you already said, Giancarlo Esposito. I think this is probably going to be a blast. And those directors who I did see at a panel, they talked about the young actress, Alicia Weir, who is Irish because they shot it in Ireland. They're like, you know, we couldn't have made this movie without her. And so I'm very, very much looking forward to it. I hope you're looking forward to it too, because it's coming out April 19th.
There you go. All right, what's our next one?
Our second one is the teaser for Tales of the Empire. So the Tales of the Jedi shorts that came out last year, you know, there's a lot of Star Wars in development. There's a lot of Star Wars announcements, and it's very easy for things to kind of slip through the cracks. So when the first trailer came out for Tales of the Jedi, I was like, what is, oh, these are those shorts that I think I had read about. And it was six shorts, three from the perspective of Ahsoka Tano, three from the perspective of Count Dooku, and just sort of chronicling their journeys as Jedi. And those shorts ended up being some of the most engaging storytelling I think we've seen from Star Wars in a while. And there was a rumor that there was going to be a season two. So when this trailer dropped and it's Tales of the Empire, it's like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic. But this one is going to be from the perspective, three from the perspective of Barriss Offee, and the three from Morgan Elsbeth. Elsbeth, I thought that was a really, really interesting choice. Like, this is a character who, you know, was obviously in the entire season of Ahsoka, but she was only in one episode of the second season of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And knowing that she is a Night Sister, I just thought using her, I thought was really, really interesting. And then, you know, we see what, like, you know, she has some interaction with a younger Thrawn. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, I'm very curious as to why they chose her. And Barriss Offee, like everyone knows from the Clone Wars, this is a Jedi that went bad. And now we get to see how that going bad went. Like, we have Jason Isaacs returning as the Grand Inquisitor. And we get a shot at the end of her new master, which would be Lord Darth Vader. The trailer for this, I just thought it was super, super unique. I love the fact that the title card came up and it said Tales of the Jedi and the word Jedi burned out as Empire took over. I was like, that speaks to a certain type of fan. And I think I am very much in that camp. But Johnny, what did you think of our first look at Tales of the Empire?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Look, I mean, one of the joys of being a Star Wars fan is secretly loving the Empire, or sometimes not so secretly loving the Empire, like overtly loving the Empire stories. They are compelling, right? You have to wonder how people fell to the dark side. Being good is so natural. It seems to be something you want to believe is natural and where you're supposed to go. So when people go bad, you want to explore why. Like, where was the moment? What was the inciting incident? What happened here? And to see it as a progression, I think, is going to be real interesting with the Barriss Offee story. And the way they lay it out in the trailer here, she is, you know, she doesn't say much. So if at anything, and she's just kind of figuring this out as it goes along and seeing where she's at with the Inquisitor, and then leading to that moment at the end when she's essentially kneeling to Vader. So this is a freedom fighter who has been turned, right? A freedom fighter who was against this thing that she was trying to destroy, And now she's going to be a part of this thing that she wanted to destroy. And we've seen that in our lives, haven't we? We've seen people who have been so adamant against a certain movement, a certain approach, a certain point of view, not get what they want or go, or not believe that the people on their side are militant enough to destroy the other side. And then they join the other side and you're like, wait, what? So it is something that we've seen in our lives. And certainly people who are old enough to remember flower power children who were all about peace and love becoming these people who were recruited to be part of domestic terrorist organizations in the 1970s. So it's not out of the realm of the possibility of Star Wars that this would happen within them, because it's influenced by a lot of what we saw originally in the 70s and what Lucas did in the 1970s with the franchise. So I like that that element is here. And then you go, as you said, Morgan Elsbeth, I thought that was really cool to see her with a younger Thrawn, you know, and we see them, I think we see them end up on Dathomir by the end of the trailer. And then we see a shot of her on that planet from the Mandalorian that she was in charge of when she confronted Ahsoka there. So clearly that's early on in her coming in when she says, well, there's a price for being a part of the Empire. But then I think we see her fighting, isn't that her fighting General Grievous? I think that's her. So it's like, well, what happened here? Right. So there's a lot here that I think that is there to, and again, I feel like a terrible person to say this, but I like Diana Lee in Asanto more when she voices over the character than when she's on camera playing the character. So for me, I thought she was excellent here voicing over Morgan Elsbeth. And I thought the animation, Shannon, was really good for her. So I just was blown away by this entire trailer and the vibe of it. And I'm looking forward to it because I love Tales of the Jedi. So I'm very much looking forward to this one.
Yeah, and this one comes out on May the 4th on Star Wars Day in just a few weeks here. And that brings us to our last trailer. This is for a Netflix series called Bodkin. So this one stars Will Forte as a true crime podcaster. With him and two locals, they go to a small Irish town to investigate a cold case of three folks disappearing about 20 years before, and they find out that that cold case might not actually be so cold after all. You know, the whole true crime podcast, that's been a big thing for the last few years, and now we're starting to see television series about true crime podcasting. You know, they did that recently with Based on a True Story on Peacock with Kaley Cuoco and Chris Messina. And this one looks like it's just going to be hopefully a lot of fun.
Yeah,
because you have that Will Forte, fish out of water, with the Irish sensibility, not just from the folks that are maybe a little bit more from the cities, but also this rural Irish sensibility. Yeah. This one looks like it's just going to be super, super entertaining. And knowing what an Anglophile you are, I'm guessing that this is right up your alley. But what did you think of our first look at Bodkin, John?
Yeah, I mean, what an interesting decision for Will Forte. Like, what an unusual combination of people, of course, taking advantage of the fact that everyone's starting a podcast now, and the true crime podcasts are really a massive industry now with people who are doing these things. Of course, Only Murders in the Building parodying it, but also becoming it within the show. So I liked that this was an approach that they wanted to do. It's an interesting story to tell. And setting it in Ireland, and if you've watched a lot of UK stuff as I have, you know, you recognize all these Irish character actors that are in the show. But I really want to give a shout out to Siobhan Cullen, and I hope I'm saying that right. It's probably Siobhan Cullen. She is great. I've seen her in a number of projects recently, from The Long Call to Dalgleish to The Dry. I've really enjoyed her work overall here, so I'm excited to see her being a part of it. She usually plays these kind of like rigid, stick up her butt type of people, and certainly that energy is here in this particular trailer. So I like what she's bringing to it. I'm not as familiar though with the other actors. I think it's Robin Cara. I think I've seen her in The Rising, but I don't remember her being a bigger part of that. So I don't know why I'm not registering it quite as strongly, but I'm looking forward to seeing the chemistry here with them and the story as it goes along. So I appreciate it that the Netflix thought to put all these people together for a story like this. I hope it's good.
Yeah, Robin Carr, she is in an Apple Plus series called Trying that I believe its fourth season is coming out. She's one of the recurring players, but she is really, really funny. So again, having her with Will Forte, I think there's going to be a lot of laughs in this series. And there's a great shot at the end where I believe it's just Robin Carr and Will Forte, but they're on a tractor going through like this, this enormous hay field. And this older farmer asks them if they like a bit of a party. And they're like, yeah, sure. And he turns on some disco lights that are on the tractor. And you get this wide shot of these, you know, flashing lights with this. I think they're playing Disco Inferno.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
But looks super funny. And this one is going to be hitting Netflix. I believe it is on May 9th.
All right, let me ask you one question before we jump out of here and take a break before we jump into our main topic here. Did you get Lily and I last night watched the trailer for Ripley? The series is out now on Netflix. Have you seen this trailer? Do you have any interest in seeing this series that is out? It's all in black and white, telling essentially the Tom Ripley story. For some of you may remember The Talented Mr. Ripley that Matt Damon and Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow were in, essentially telling the fuller story here with him, with, what's the actor's name?
Andrew Scott.
Sorry, Andrew Scott. I get Adam Scott and Andrew Scott mixed up. But yes, Andrew Scott playing the role here of Ripley. Did you see the trailer? Are you interested in the series at all?
Absolutely. Okay. The film, when it came out 20 plus years ago with Matt Damon and Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow, that is a beautiful film to watch. Yeah. In terms of pacing, I thought it was really, really slow.
It is slow, yeah.
I mean, you get to some great moments. I mean, everything with Philip Seymour Hoffman is fantastic. Oh, my. Watching the trailer for the Andrew Scott version, putting it in that black and white, getting like that slightly more noir feel. And Matt Damon was excellent in the role, but I think Andrew Scott is going to bring a more malevolent approach.
Yeah.
And I might be wrong. Maybe he's going to be fresh as a daisy and all smiles.
Not from the trailer.
But my guess is that we're going to see shades of Moriarty from Sherlock. And that's not to whittle his career down to one particular role, but the black and white, the Italian landscape, looking at like, you know, this guy who is he's a master con artist.
Yeah.
And if you know the story, you know that he takes a step forward on the morality scale that he's not able to walk back.
Right.
And Andrew Scott seems like he just seems like a better fit for that role than Damon probably was.
Yeah, I saw the trailer last night. I'm like, okay, I want to see this. So yeah, I'm very curious to see. Once we finish the 100, the second season of that, Physical 100, I think the Korean reality workout show, we're going to jump into that. I love that show, the Physical 100. If you're not watching the Physical 100, it's a fucking awesome show. It's an awesome show. Competition, people. I mean, these people are in phenomenal shape, being told to do incredible challenges to whittle it down to one person. So I love the first season, been enjoying the second season. So can't wait to jump into Ripley here on Netflix. But there's so much out there right now. Jesus Christ, there's a lot of TV and a lot of films about to be out there as well. So this is a good time, folks. It's revving up here. All right, let's take a quick break, Shannon. And when we come back, we'll hear from you about WonderCon right after this.
Oh boy, if I'd done my research, I'd be humming a Stevie Wonder song right now.
You don't know it?
Not off the top of my head. I'm not good in the clutch.
As a performer, I think you're good in the clutch, but I think maybe calling upon music, maybe not the biggest. Mr. McClung, you were able to go to WonderCon this past, a couple weeks ago.
Or last weekend.
Last weekend. You saw a bunch of our friends there, like Michael Andrew Baker. You also hung out with Mike Kalinowski, friend of the show, Mike Kalinowski. You guys love Kalinowski. So what was your experience here at WonderCon? What can you talk about? What can you say, brother man?
Well, WonderCon is always sort of a great warm-up for San Diego Comic-Con because it is a smaller con. The Anaheim Convention Center is a little smaller. Not as many big things come to Anaheim as they do to San Diego, but that doesn't mean that nothing comes to Anaheim. Like, they did a big Ready Player One panel years ago, that Kalinowski and I were actually there for. I don't remember if Spielberg was there, but they brought out everyone in the cast. Like Ben Mendelsohn was there. And they showed a lot of footage that previously they had not shown. Mm. So this was an interesting year. One, it rained, which...
Oh, yeah, it was raining.
I mean, Southern California, we're getting more rain this year than we've gotten in a long time. And rain and extravagant cosplay don't necessarily go right together.
So true.
So you'll see some great Deadpools, you know, sporting ponchos. You'll see some Princess Leia's wearing raincoats. I mean, but the con was actually, it was a lot of fun. I mean, Kalinowski is more of a floor guy. He likes to go out and, you know, search out rare toys and everything. I'm more of a panel guy. And I went and saw quite a few TV panels with a lot of TV writers, showrunners from stuff like, you know, Quantum Leap and the new Law and Order. And they were kind of discussing the state of the industry. And because it is kind of a weird, it's kind of a weird time right now coming off the writers and the actor strike. And it looked like there was possibly going to be another strike. I think that's been averted, but they're basically like, yeah, like this is streaming kind of broke television for a little bit, and right now the studios are trying to figure out how they can monetize streaming. And that's why you're seeing like Amazon Prime is now, you have to pay more not to get ads, and Amazon Prime is actually going to be going to the upfronts for the first time, which is where advertisers go and see what the networks are offering. Like, where are we going to spend our advertising dollars? But the panel that really I was really excited about was Collider's Directors on Directing. Mm. And this year they had Wes Ball from Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes,
right?
David Leitch from The Fall Guy, and they had Radio Silence there representing Abigail. And so just getting... The purpose of the panel really is to kind of spark a conversation between the directors, which is always interesting to hear. And because it's the big panel at WonderCon, they actually had a decent amount of footage. I mean, starting with Abigail, again, the team from Radio Silence, they went into just the actress, Alicia Weir, who they found to play Abigail, young Irish actress. Who they said, like, if we had not found her, we don't know if this movie would have been made, because she was just, he's like, she was so professional. She was so like, just, you know, they auditioned her over Zoom. I mean, this is, this is the lead of your movie. I mean, you know, it's an ensemble movie, but this is the title character, and they had to audition her over Zoom. And they're like, you know, as soon as she started, it's like, oh, there's something different about this one. So in terms of the footage for this one, I'll try not to get into spoiler territory and just kind of give impressions. But if you saw Ready or Not, and you saw the amount of blood that was used in the third act of that movie, it seems like Abigail is going further.
Wow.
I mean, it is going to be a gory, bloody affair. They did talk about the amount of blood that they used, and that it was, you know, it's corn syrup based, and it probably could have fed a small town in terms of pancake toppings. But it just looks like it's going to be like, if you are squeamish, this is probably not going to be the movie for you. But this is just going to be a bloody and hopefully hilariously good time. We basically get our crew understanding the predicament that they are in. We've seen this moment in the trailers where the house suddenly goes into lockdown mode, and the kidnappers realize they're the ones that are trapped in there with this little feral vampire ballerina. More great visuals of her in her blood-soaked tutu, just kind of smiling at them, again, acknowledging the fact like, yeah, you're screwed. you kidnapped the wrong kid. But yeah, I mean, this one, I don't want to go into too spoilery of territory, but listening to them talk about talk about their process. You know, you can tell these are guys that were just raised on horror movies. I mean, and both two sweet, like, seem like really, really sweet, kind of soft-spoken guys that, you know, that are able to excavate the darker corners of our personalities. But again, it just looks like it's going to be very bloody, but it looks like it is going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
The next one was The Fall Guy.
Oh, yeah.
And so this was David Leitch, and, you know, this is, you know, he directed Bullet Train, Deadpool 2. This one, like, we know it's going to be funny. Like, we're hoping it's going to be funny just from the chemistry that Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt have, not just in the promotional materials, not just in the trailers, but you saw them present an award at the Oscars, and you got to hear them trade some shots about Oppenheimer and Barbie, which one was actually the better movie, and, you know, whatnot. So unfortunately, the footage that they showed, they were not together.
Oh, at all in the footage?
Nope. It was an intercut sequence, and you have Emily Blunt kind of doing her thing, right, which, you know, she's actually, it's a scene that was shown in the trailer, but her at a karaoke party. And she also was one of the voices in the My Little Pony movie that Mr. Vogel wrote several years ago. And she had to sing in that one too, but she actually does have a really, really incredible voice. But the Gosling side is a big action sequence. And again, you get to see, I haven't always gotten on with David Leitch's comedic sensibilities. I think he gets there some of the time. Other times I'm like, there's just something missing. But in terms of action, he always delivers. And the scene that they showed is Gosling taking on, fighting the red-bearded Aussie henchman that we've seen in the trailer. It's like they're basically, I mean, they've shown a little bit of it in the trailer, but they're basically in like this, it almost looks like kind of like a bin, like it's giant iron bin that's being dragged. So you're having them fighting on
like a container, like a shipping.
Yeah. Like a smaller shipping container,
right.
But they're having this fight back and forth as it's being dragged along. I think they're in Sydney, along the streets of Sydney.
Wow.
And again, the thing that I think will make this, even though it was, the action looked awesome, it was filmed great, it's exciting, you're going to be on the edge of your seat, the thing that makes it, that really sells it, is Ryan Gosling. Because even when he's trading punches and getting kicked in the stomach and getting kicked in the face, he still has this his comedic, he's in sixth gear. He is just, every punch that he throws, every blow that he takes, it's just loaded with character, which I think why he is one of the more exciting performers that we have leading films nowadays.
For sure.
And the last one, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, this one is going to terrify you, Johnny.
Oh, really?
So
that's kind of surprising.
It is the human girl with our ape hero, who I believe the character's name is Noah.
Yeah.
They are being taken to an ape stronghold. I don't know if this is the kingdom in the title, but it's definitely an ape stronghold. And it has been kind of fashioned out of a dilapidated freighter.
Wow.
So you see this broken down ship that is slowly coming apart. And as our heroes kind of get into, like, you hear all of the shrieks of these chimps, and the sounds are bouncing off these, you know, again, these old steel parts of the ship.
Yeah.
As I was watching, I'm like, oh, John is not going to do well. knowing his fear of a simian uprising.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
But just in terms of scope, in terms of the effects, I mean, they showed this clip, which is basically just the entrance to this giant set piece. And then they showed the trailer, the new trailer that's out, the IMAX trailer, where you just get to see the level of action and just how far. I mean, Weta did the effects.
Yeah.
So you see just how amazing all of these characters look. And I don't know how the movie's going to be, but based off of the scope and the visuals, I mean, the clip that they showed of the three, this one was visually the most impressive. It just gets you into that feeling of like, all right, that right there, that is a summer movie.
Wow, that's exciting. I'm the hype on that one is very big. I know Jeff on the hot mic a few weeks ago said that he had heard some early test screenings didn't go well, but other people countered that and said that they had heard test screenings went really well. So it's going to be interesting to see when this thing comes out, what the feeling is. And Wes Ball, I think, is a director that people, for the most part, don't know yet where he falls. Is he great? Is he an up-and-comer who's going to knock it out of the park, or is he going to fall short a little bit? So I think a lot of people are looking forward to it. And do we need do we need another Apes movie, because the last one didn't do so well financially? Is this one going to get hooked into the public? We will see. The Fall Guy thing doesn't surprise me. Also, there have been so many great reactions to that. I think it's one of the films they're showing at CinemaCon, so you'll see more reactions from that next week when it comes out. But overall, it seems to be something that people are very much looking forward to seeing. And Abigail, we'll find out in a couple weeks. Are there any other highlights from your experience? Like, what did you? I saw a lot of people commenting that WonderCon had kind of lost its magic. It wasn't as dense. It wasn't as populated. There were some empty areas. What did you sense when you were there at WonderCon and about it overall? And what were your highlights besides the director's panel?
Well, I mean, again, like, I don't go to WonderCon every year. Okay. And this is the first time I actually stayed over. Like, this year I went to Disney California Adventures Food and Wine Festival by myself. So, nice. You know, looking like a real winner in their beer garden. And I had to go see Soarin' Over California while it's back for a limited time.
Oh, yeah. Patrick Warburton, yeah.
But then I made sure to have dinner with our friend Mike Baker, who, if you have seen Oppenheimer, he plays one of Oppenheimer's attorneys. He's got a very nice featured role. He did a fantastic job. But then WonderCon to me has never been packed. Like, it's always been a kind of not sparsely attended, but again, being so conditioned with San Diego and the chaos and the madhouse it can be. To me, I kind of like WonderCon, that there is some elbow room. Like, you don't have to worry about standing in a line for an hour and not getting into something. Like, I was surprised with the director's panel, because there was a panel before. It was a Funko Pop panel.
Oh, nice.
And Kalinowski and I were texting, because he was on the floor and he's like, maybe I'll come. And I'm looking, I'm like, it's starting to kind of fill up here, man. I thought it was going to be like a San Diego situation where it's like, all right, if you want to see this panel, you're going to have to see the three before it. You're going to need to get in. And when the Funko Pop panel ended, more than half the hall emptied out, which I was really, really surprised about.
Yeah.
And I think the weather kind of had a little bit to do with it as well.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. It wasn't raining. It was raining last weekend.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, even everywhere, like, there's a when you come out the convention center, there's a Marriott on the right, there's a Hilton on the left. The Marriott area was like kind of flooded. Like, it was very difficult to get to the convention center if you didn't go inside and go around. It was very difficult to get there without getting your feet soaked.
Yeah.
The panel I went to in the morning was that showrunners panel. And there were a group of them probably about 10 minutes before the panel had started. And the hall, it was thin. And they were all kind of discussing amongst themselves, like, I don't know. I mean, it looks like the rain is really kind of hurting our numbers here. Well, Mark Bernardin was on the panel, who was super, super entertaining. But by the end, it had started to fill up a little bit. So for me, I mean, I kind of like that it's not a madhouse at WonderCon. But again, like, the only panels I went to were the director's panel and a bunch of TV writer panels.
Right.
Night before, I went to the Hilton, wondering if it was going to be like a Hilton bar situation in San Diego. And it was. I mean, that bar was slammed with people. Like, Kalinowski and I walked in and we're like, well, not going here. Turned around and went someplace else. But the highlight of all conventions for me,
okay,
because I'm not a cosplay guy. Like, I don't I don't have the dedication to
dress up for your job already. So why would you need to dress up?
Yeah. That's true. I cosplay 5 days a week. the one of the highlights is always looking at the time and care and craft that is put in to those costumes. Because I mean, Kalinowski, he I don't know how many of his followers know, but he builds costumes. Like that's something he does. That's like one of his hobbies. He wore his, I'm sure you remember, he wore his Captain America outfit a few years ago down in San Diego. But I just love seeing, the passion that's involved with putting those costumes together. Because, you know, fandoms, especially if you're basing them off of online, fandoms can get, you know, can look a little toxic, a little unfriendly. I think at a place like WonderCon, you can see the good side of the fandom. You can see just the joy that these people get from you know, putting these costumes together, finding their group, finding their, you know, kind of found family. That's the stuff that I love to see at a con.
I agree with you. The vibe at a con is so great, and there's not a lot of negativity and toxicity when you're in those halls and going into those convention rooms and experiencing, because it's about fandom, and it's a fun time. For sure. But I do want to ask you about one thing, because I know we got to wrap up here in about 3 minutes. But Sam Raimi at WonderCon had some comments about the possibility of directing Secret Wars. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this because he was in the news for this. He was at this panel. Let me see if I've got this right. Yeah, he was attending WonderCon. And he was talking about, he said, I love 90% of the Marvel heroes that I've read in the great Stan Lee Marvel Universe comic books. Way to play to the crowd. I would love to work with Marvel again. They haven't reasonably asked me to. I hope they had a good experience with me. They haven't asked me yet. I hope they do. So a lot of people are taking this as him essentially saying, hire me. I want to direct Avengers Secret War. So real quick, because I know we're running out of time, your thoughts maybe in 60 seconds on this idea, this possibility of what he said.
Based off of his work in Multiverse of Madness, which I was not a fan of, I would not be a big supporter of his directing that film. Okay. Now there are some folks out there that actually absolutely love Multiverse of Madness, and they're like, absolutely get Sam Raimi on. And I think to place all the blame for Multiverse of Madness at Raimi's feet is a little unfair. You know, he's talked about the fact that, you know, he hadn't watched all of WandaVision and didn't know everything that had transpired. Right. And while that is a ding on him, it's a ding on Marvel as well. Like if this guy is not sufficiently prepared, that apparently that information was not communicated as strongly as it should have been. Because again, movies are not made by one person. Movies are very much, especially at the Marvel level, they are made by committee. And so there were several balls dropped in the process. Knowing what a unique style Raimi has, again, I don't think that fits with an Avengers movie. I think the Russo brothers kind of dialed into what an Avengers movie needs to be. It's kind of like, would you want James Gunn to direct an Avengers movie? My guess would be no, based off of what he established in Guardians. But again, maybe Superman Legacy is going to come out and be like, nope, James Gunn was the guy. It was James Gunn all along. So on its surface, not a fan, but he has certainly made some entertaining movies in the past. So if that is the way they decide to go, we'll just cross our fingers and hope it turns out well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't deny the film made, what, $975 million. So clearly a lot of people enjoyed the aesthetic of Sam Raimi, even if some people creatively didn't like the movie, like all of us on the Geek Buddies didn't. In the end, you got to look at the dollars and cents, and you got to look at the reaction from the fans. And if it's overwhelmingly positive, it seems to be that he would be in the mix to take this over. Plus, after all these taking a chance on the younger directors, younger writers, and having a lot of these missteps and fumbles over the last couple of years, bringing someone who's got a steady hand, who's been doing it for a few decades, might not be a bad idea. But we will see in the end what they end up doing here. All right, well, that's our episode this week of the Geek Buddies. Thank you all so much for joining us. We appreciate it madly. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you'd like to follow Mr. Rocha and ask him where he got that Macho Man shirt, you can follow him @TheRochaSays. Yes. If you'd like to follow the apps at Mr. Vogel and ask him where he got those PJs, it's @MKTune.
Yes, right. And you can follow us on Twitter @geek_buddies or on Instagram @the_geek_buddies there. Follow us there. And also, look out for all the stuff we got coming up here in the next few weeks. Everything's ramping up, so please get on board and subscribe to the podcast. That's a really big deal. We've got some great people involved with the podcast. Regal Unlimited is now going to be a sponsor of the Geek Buddy. So please take advantage of all the stuff that they've got coming out. Marquee TV is another client of ours. We're going to record some ads for them. They are sponsoring us here. So please patronize the sponsors of the show as well as patronizing the show. That would mean a lot for us there. All right. Please subscribe to the channel down below. Hit that bell button. Leave your comments. And if you want to send a special thanks, hit that special thanks and send your support. And we'll talk to you next time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode here of the
Geek Buddies. Hey!
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.